Hi, everyone. Welcome back. To those of you joining on Speech Therapy PD, you might be here on YouTube, or you might be listening back on Spotify or another streaming platform. I'm glad you're here. I'm Corinne Smoos. I'm hosting the Gestalt Get-Together, where we talk about all things GLP. Tonight, I have a really lovely guest. She is a board-certified nursing professional development specialist, and she's also the program director of a nationally recognized transition to practice program for new graduate nurses. With a background in pediatric nursing, clinical research, and leadership, our guest brings nearly two decades of experience to the table at her job, but she believes it's her role as a mom that has shaped her most deeply. She is the proud mom to two boys, one GLP, one ALP, and she blends her clinical expertise with her lived experience to speak openly and compassionately about neurodiversity, advocacy, and helping families through every step of their own journey. So let's give a warm welcome to my guest, Melanie.
Hi, Corinne. Hello, hey, everyone.
I'm so glad to have you here. So I gave some of your background, but I want to hear from you. Why are you sitting here today talking about GLP?
I wanted to hang out with you, of course. I had the joy of working with you through Liam's journey. So my youngest son, Liam, is neurodiverse. He was diagnosed with autism at the tender age of 21 months old. However, you and I started our journey way before that. As you mentioned, my background is in pediatric nursing. So as you can imagine, I know my ages and stages very well. Think back to 5 years ago, we were at the start of COVID. So having a baby during that time was nerve-wracking enough, but to notice as a mom and a pediatric nurse that your child wasn't meeting milestones. So the biggest flag for me was that by 12 months, he was not responsive to name and he wasn't babbling. He wasn't really responsive to the environment. He was just hanging out. He was as cute as a button, super happy, chill baby, but kind of in his own little world. I remember bringing it up to his pediatrician, who I actually worked with in the inpatient setting. And she's a wonderful pediatrician, but her initial reaction was, oh, he's a COVID baby. And, you know, as a nurse, you're taught a lot. And what I teach my nurse residents, my new graduate nurses, is to trust your nursing gut when something is off and don't let go. And I couldn't, you know, my gut was telling me this is more than just COVID delay. So I went out, researched a little bit more. I engaged the county infant and toddler program. So we were able to receive some early support. But again, during that time of COVID, it was very limited in what they were able to do virtually. And then I found you. And I really appreciated on your website how you shared your philosophy of really being engaged, not just with the client, the child, but with the family, and then integrating the music. Our family is really big on music. I play piano. My eldest son loves singing and dancing. So it just felt like a really organic fit. And within minutes of meeting you during that initial consult, I knew that you were someone that would help shape Liam's trajectory some way, somehow.
So let's go back there, because you spoke about what it was like to, you noticed, right? You're like, developmentally, milestone-wise, this isn't lining up. Very proactive. Let me look into this. Let me figure out what's going on. And let's get on language right away. And you're seeing how his focus was, it was more like the internal focus of what he was interested in. I'm thinking back to, and I'm really excited to talk about this. I should have said this earlier. One of the reasons I wanted to have you on was because it's really cool to have been able to see Liam move through the stages, like really that, not that language acquisition like ever stops, right? We're going to be learning new words for many more decades. But when it comes to what I pull from a lot, which is natural language acquisition, my Marge Blanc originally written about in 2012, the stages of NLA. And so many of you listening might be familiar with these stages. Even if you're brand new to GLP and you're trying to get oriented, you've probably heard of the stages. And because we've really seen Liam go through them, I mean, he's producing some really cool stage 5 and 6 utterances now. But I wanted to briefly go over those with everyone and share a link that might be helpful, especially if there are parents who are listening to the recording in the future. Let's go through these and maybe notice, is this where my kid might be at? And if you're a speech therapist, I want you to see if any of these stages remind you of your client. So stage 1, this is when kids are producing what we refer to as gestalts. Some people call these scripts. This could be delayed echolalia. It's when there's a chunk of language or that it was once heard in another situation and then produced in another. It can be from songs. It can be a full sentence they heard, a script, part of media. And it doesn't necessarily have like that same exact literal meaning. It's really derived from the emotion and the context in which it was originally heard and kind of taken in and absorbed. So that could be a song lyric that applies really well to the place that they were in when they heard it. Maybe it was a conversational turn that their dad took when he was really angry. And that kid was like, oh, ding, I want that. I'm going to use that. So gestalts can be things like da, e, ah, ooh, ooh. That melody, we're going to recognize that as happy birthday to you. But just because the words aren't clear, it doesn't matter. It's still a gestalt. And anyone who's listening live, if you hear one of these stage descriptions and it reminds you of a client, please jump in and let us know in the chat. Stage 2 is when these big chunks of meaning that can be as short as like a single word gestalt, like dinosaur. It might be a song title like Baby Shark. These are both very Liam-ish. But actually a gestalt can be as long as the entire script to like Shrek. It can be really, really long. It just depends on what that kid takes in as that big unit. But then what happens in what's called stage 2? And again, all this comes back to Marge Blanc's work from 2012. And I'm also going to link the book that she wrote. But stage 2 is when these are mitigated gestalts. This is when language or these chunks from stage 1 are then broken down into smaller parts. These can sometimes be, my favorite is like a slot and frame, is when one or two words are kind of like swapped in and out. So like, give me that T-Rex, give me that Triceratops. It's where something kind of becomes like a blank line and we can slot new things in. I think that is so much fun to work on. But it could also be half and half. So it could be like A, B, C, D to you. So half and half of some originals. I don't know. I love stage 2 so much. But then what happens as things are pared down more and more, then we can get down to those true single words. When a kid really starts to understand like, okay, more refers to the quality of like an increase or happening again, not just gotta have more, which gets to the feeling of wanting more, but perhaps not the true semantic value we see at stage 3. So getting down to those like true isolated words. This is when we might see, and I have some like vivid memories of when I was doing sessions in his ABA clinic with him, where he'd pick up a dinosaur and you could just see him choosing each word. He'd go, dinosaur, green. And it was like he was pulling those words out. It didn't sound gestalt-y because there was like labor and effort there to create this two-word combination. Stage 4, that is when we start to see simple sentences. Something like, which, oh my gosh, the one you just reminded me of, what was it? It was Mama Go Cherry Hill, right? That one? That would be a stage 4. He really put together that early grammar. Then 5 and 6, that's when we see these self-generated sentences that get more and more complex grammar. It's not just like, give me milk kitchen. It's, I want to go to the kitchen and get milk. it gets this momentum, all this grammar is getting involved. And so that's the arc of those stages. Very simply put, if this is your first time hearing about the stages, please don't take just that as your information. Go read more about it. Mel, when I outline that arc, tell me what stands out to you about Liam's experience.
I think about his interests at those times, right? Like, he was very big into, I think, baby shark and dinos were majority of his interests for the longest time. So everything was baby shark. You know, that I would just hear him do, 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 do. It wasn't even a language. And then it was you who kind of showed us, okay, like, maybe talk to him in that do, do, do tone. And he would start to pick up on that. And he did. And same thing with the dinosaurs, you know, as you were sharing your memory of working with him in the in his ABA clinic, I'm reminded of you helping me as a parent understand kind of what's happening in his sweet little brain. And you, I think I even still have it on my fridge. You took a piece of paper and you drew his brain, and then you drew a filing cabinet and folders inside. And you're like, this is Liam's brain. He is literally digging in. And I know we haven't touched on the fact that he was using an AEC, but again, like, we saw that externally as he's navigating the different words, navigating folders, toggling between English and Tagalog. But it's been a wild and awesome journey to see in real time.
Yeah, and he's really moved through all of those. So I want to zoom in a little bit on each one and definitely talk about AEC. That was a big part of our work together. Going back to some of the early sessions, I have a vivid memory of a parachute that I brought, and definitely the ukulele. I am notorious for the ukulele, which is such a millennial trope, I realize, and it's embarrassing, but oh well. But I remember parachute, where I think one of the first things, other than using a lot of singing, using music as the vehicle or the container, was showing you about what's called like a verbal routine. And a verbal routine is something like 3, 2, 1. It creates anticipation. It creates excitement. And if we're going to extend on like the filing cabinet idea, which I feel like is kind of a dated analogy now, because we have computers and hard drives rather than filing cabinets. But to extend that, when it's almost like a verbal routine, you kind of set it up and you're almost like pointing to the right file. Like, it's in here, this one. It does a lot of priming for a kid's brain. Like if I do like ready, set,
go.
Right? So many of your brains are going to go. It's priming that. It's almost like, it's almost painful to not fill it in. And so that strategy I love to introduce. It creates a lot of excitement around communication. And I remember that's one that we did pretty early on. And do you remember what happened?
Yeah, that was the first of many tearful, happy, tearful sessions. That was Liam's very first word. Go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, yeah, the parachute, or I think we took like a bin and we sat him in it and we would push, like, it was just that one
time.
Like, again, that concept of just like that movement,
yeah,
associating the countdown or the priming to get him to say something that would actually move, the go.
Yeah.
So just watching him anticipate. Of course, the first couple of turns, it took him a minute to understand that cause and effect. Yeah. And I have a picture where you are you're strumming your ukulele, ready, set, and you have this face like you're waiting for him, and he's looking and he's like, yes, I know what it is, and he said it.
Yeah.
And drummed away, and then we stopped, and then he, you know, he didn't even wait for you to say the ready, set, go. He's just like, go, meaning like, I want you to play more.
Yeah, I really, and less so about the word itself. It was more like the word is like a byproduct of what we were really creating, which was that joint attention. And when I think about kids who remind me of Liam, where their attention can be really focused in on an object or like a toy or some sort of sensation, which is giving them like a lot of pleasure and value. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when we're thinking about language, socially acquired language, it really comes down to that joint attention. Are we sharing attention on some third thing and connecting over it in a way that allows us to send signals to one another? And doing a verbal routine like that, because of the anticipation that it engenders, we were able to have that really clear joint attention where he was locked in and like, basically he really, it was about that shared joy and that shared moment. And being able to say that word was kind of a byproduct of that. So much of the early work with GLPs is about kind of stepping back from, okay, I need you to say this now, and this is what I think would be the most important word for your life. It's, can I create experiences where this kid really wants to connect with us and get those signals? How can we create really valuable signals for them to pick up on? So you mentioned AAC. I didn't wait that long to bring it up.
No.
All right. Walk me through the experience on your end.
So again, Liam was maybe 20 months. We've only been working together a handful of months. And, you know, again, like he was so receptive to our sessions, our time together. You were like, hey, you know, have you ever heard of an AAC? Do you understand what it does? And you suggested that Liam would be a really good candidate to adopt this, given where he was at. So I think for me, I was still very much in that denial stage that like my child has, I don't want to say something wrong, but he wasn't your typical develop, you know, he wasn't developmentally tracking. So part of me had a little bit of reservation, right? The stigma already associated with the fact that my child had delayed language, that I was already seeking out all these special services. But very quickly, I said, get out of your head, Mel. Like, if this could help your child communicate, why wouldn't you try it? You know, there's no physical harm, you know, there's no harm in exploring and trying. I think it was for me just the stigma. What would it be like? Is this a permanent thing? But you know what? We've decided ultimately, let's give it a go. And I remember you suggest, you know, as we were talking about the different applications we could go about, you had suggested cough drop and advised we explore that one first. And I remember laughing and saying, huh, cough drop. And you're like, yeah, because if you think about cough drops, when your voice is hoarse, or, you know, your voice isn't there altogether, it helps you raise your voice out so others can hear you. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. And, you know, slowly but surely, you know, this little guy was picking it up like nothing. You know, my favorite memory of him adopting the AAC was the word chicken. You know, he, for whatever reason, he loved pressing chicken. And then one day he pressed it, looked at me and Jackson, and then started going, gah! And then, like, you know, like, of course I'm tickled because I now understand he knows what that is. And then he loved my reaction. So he would just do it. And then, you know, that advancement of chaining multiple words together. I loved, not sponsored by Cough Drop or anything, but I loved how we were able to really personalize and tailor the applications that we had a folder where we had pictures of all of our family, all of our friends, all of his interprofessional team members and their names, so he could start calling people out by name. I'm a Filipino background, so we even made sure to be able to toggle into a Tagalog folder where he could start picking up on that, since he and his older brother were also attending culture school. So it really was a cool mechanism for him to share what he's thinking while he wasn't able to voice it himself.
And that's one of the reasons I was drawn to Cough Drop, was because I really liked how many language options there were that were actually created by other people. So that's what I'm drawn to, is when I'm thinking about AAC, like feature matching for families who speak other languages that aren't kind of like the big ones. Because there's other AAC software where like they've got Spanish, they've got Mandarin, they've got French. But for these other languages that may not have like a full translation available, I really like CoughDrop because you can search what other people have created pretty easily. And they've made really cool stuff. And so I loved the page that some stranger I'm grateful to created. And we just linked that in through a button. It was super easy through CoughDrop to create that linkage from Liam's page into a copy of what that other person had created.
I'll also say, you know, in working with you in the AAC, the other challenge I was nervous about was, you know, it's one thing to teach me how to support Liam with the AAC, how to support, you know, how Liam's dad in Jackson. But like, again, not only was Liam in speech therapy, he was in occupational therapy. He was in full-time ABA. So how did we get all the team members to speak the same language? And so I'm so appreciative that you made the time to also connect. You know, we would have those periodic interprofessional team meetings and say, okay, this is AAC. Or like, you know, there were times where you and Maddie would meet up and she would say, you know, this is what's happening in the clinic. Okay, let's add these to the folder. Let's add these words. Let's add these team members. So in real time, Liam's language was expanding. So that was
great. I remember like all being in the bathroom together at the clinic.
Yeah. One point.
Like, all right, we're having a team meeting in here because this is what we're talking about. Speaking of Maddie, you know, we had a really cool experience where we were able to have like a session out in the community in a really unique way. I've heard from a lot of families that like bringing AAC out into the world can feel very vulnerable. So tell us about the equipment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I kind of mentioned part of my reservation was, you know, how do you address that stigma and fear? I'm very grateful, you know, through our involvement with the infant toddler program, I was able to learn about all of the resources and support networks that are available to families with neurodiverse children, with autistic children. So we were fortunate to participate in Autism Night Out at the National Aquarium in Baltimore. We were able to get tickets. So it was a really fun family night for me, Liam, Jackson, their dad. But we were able to have you there and we were able to have Maddie there. So, you know, at that time, Liam was prime baby shark era, right? So he had his little yellow baby shark and we're walking around and, you know, we were, if any of you have ever been to the National Aquarium, one of the early exhibits where they have like the jellyfish and the little column thingies. I remember you kneeling down with his AAC and helping him identify jellyfish on his device and then pointing, you know, trying to get him to understand like that's what that is. And it took the pressure off being amongst other families that were, you know, holding AAC devices or had other supportive systems in place. We were with our people. So what safer way to go out into the world for the first time? And I think for me as mom, you know, as I mentioned, I have a neurotypical older child. And so we've done, you know, I'm used to being out. Why wouldn't I do that with my younger? So it kind of gave me that confidence and reminder of like, oh, you know, sure, we have to make sure that his AAC is charged, but like often goes with us into the world. And, you know, I learned how to create that elevator pitch when we were at the playground or at the mall or at the library, you know, when people ask, oh, what game is he playing? No, it's not a game. This is Liam's voice. And even, you know, I talk about Jackson a lot. Like, he's the best big brother ever, but this is where he even learned some of that scripted language. Oh no, Liam's not playing a toy. This is Liam's voice, because Liam doesn't know the words yet. So it was really cool to see him advocate for his little brother as well.
Yeah. Remind me of two things with that. One is that we just had another family come on as a guest, and they actually last week did the aquarium night too. And they were saying, you know, it was a hard night. He had a really hard time, huge meltdown because one of the exhibits was closed and nobody blinked. Nobody even looked at us because everybody got it. Like, he was so upset. He was crying. And literally, like, everyone there was like, yeah, been there. So I'm really grateful they do events like that. The other thing he reminded me of was my partner told me, he got so excited. He came home and he was like, guess what? He teaches high school tennis. He's like, the most amazing thing happened. There were a bunch of teenage girls. And one of them had an iPad, was walking by, and then a group comes by. One of the girls in the group turns around and goes, is that an AAC device? And the girl at the AAC goes, yeah, nervous. And the other girl is like, that's so cool. I've heard about these. And they start talking about it. And my partner was like, I can't believe that just happened. So it's really cool that, like, it's starting to be more known.
Agreed. I mean, even in playgrounds, there are some playgrounds in the area that I've seen that have the actual, like, billboards with the AAC. And, like, I remember the first playground I took the kids to, Jackson immediately saw that. And they're like, hey, you know, at this point, Liam had, you know, stopped using. He didn't need the AAC anymore. But he saw it. He recognized the little tiles. And he goes, that kind of looks like Liam's, you know, old AAC. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Because there are some other kids that might need it, but maybe don't want to have to schlep around their tablet, so they get to point at the pictures. So I love it.
And it's cool because, like, even if that board is, like, never used at the playground, it's giving exposure to anyone who goes there to be like, oh, what is this? I'm curious about this. So that if and when they see the device in a kid's or an adult's hand, they already have a template for what that could be. So that's really cool. So yeah, he was, and there was a point where you realize and then you communicate, like, hey, he's speaking so much and he's not as interested in using the device. What was that transition point like for you as a family?
It was, you know, by that point, we were so on board with the AAC. It's like, okay, it's like getting rid of the pacifier, right? Like that comfort, like, okay, like how is he going to talk now? What happens if he doesn't have the word? Or doesn't know how to navigate it in his filing cabinet. So it was mixed emotions, right? Like on the one hand, we got comfortable, but on the other hand, it was really exciting because that meant that he was engaged. And again, I think back to our very first sessions in the console where I shared with you, like, he's just not an active member of the world. But here he is. He wants to soak himself in the world so much that he's leaving a tablet behind. So it was exciting. And then, you know, I think it gave us, you know, namely him and you, more opportunities to really immerse more in that, like, play environment without having to remember, oh, the tablet. Oh, what tile are we looking for?
Yeah. And I think it was able to, I mean, I love AAC. So I kind of grieved that a little bit too, where I was like, that pivot away from, because AAC is so powerful for giving the visual correlate for it organizes language in such a cool way. No matter the software you're using, the way it's organized, there's a lot of intention behind it. But it also gave more opportunities for, you know, once we really started to see that, like, Liam is, he is a speaker. He is able to speak. He's able to form words with his mouth that are intelligible and really moving in that direction. By him, he really decided, right? He decided to pivot away from his device. We were just following his lead. It gave us our opportunities for him to really now watch mouth movements because he was less so looking at the letters and the pictures and the sequences. He could really then tune into the shape of words, the motion there, the gesture behind spoken words. So it did help then to move him towards more intelligibility. And the depth of play did grow because it wasn't just like exploring and babbling, which is really important on AAC, but the depth of play grew. So I know for me, I love play. I love, like, you could put me in a room with a bunch of random objects and I could do a 6-hour session with them. I love play. I see you shaving your head. What?
Because I think I told you probably during our consult that I don't remember how to play.
Yeah.
I feel like it was very much like a Peter Pan moment where you're like, let's stay kids forever. And I love that. And I love that's the energy that you brought to the session. And I always felt a little bit like, you know, a little bah humbug scrimmage sometimes, just not because I didn't want to play. Don't get me wrong. Like I, especially as a pediatric nurse, right? Like we want our interventions to be developmentally appropriate, child friendly, and lots of color, lots of movement, energy. But it's hard to do that. It was hard for me, and still, even to this day, a little hard for me to take off the hat of mom, of caregiver. And especially, you know, by this point in our, you know, speech journey and Liam's autism journey, we're about a year and a half in. So from a caregiver perspective, like I was tapped out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, driving to and from sessions is literally a half day event. And you want me to sit down and what? Build blocks? Like, okay, sure. But, you know, am I going to have fun with it? No, I'm going to do it. But I'm going to be a trooper and I'm going to smile and I'm going to try really hard. So it was a learning curve for me. But I think seeing him excited reminded me, okay, I have to watch my energy. I have to watch my emotion. You know, I love hearing your tone when you work with Liam because he, you know, you can see very quickly how well he receives when you're high pitched and engaged or when you're trying to like mess with him and be a little bit more passive or dull. He questions it or he steps back too.
Yeah. Were there any ways of playing with him? Because play can look so many different ways. It's not just blocks. Were there any ways of playing with him that felt more natural to you?
I think once he had an interest that I actually knew, yes, was certainly helpful, right? So Baby Shark was relatively easy. I could get on board with that. Dinosaurs, a little more challenging, only because he was so particular and specific with which dinosaurs he wanted to play with and how he wanted to play with them. You would have thought he was a full-fledged paleontologist at Jurassic World. So that wasn't fun for me because I didn't know what I was talking about. When we moved towards Mario World,
yeah,
I got behind, you know, the Mario Kart. I got behind that. I was able to pull back my childhood a little bit by recalling the characters. So I think for me, it was like if I could get on board with the story, the characters, it was a little bit easier for me. There's one period, and I know you enjoyed it very much, his Rainbow Friends era. I think that was the hardest to connect with because it was so abstract. I still don't understand what these characters are, what they do, or the whole purpose. Yeah. But he was so, and still is so passionate and curious about these characters. He'll pull out the little toys and play and say, Mama, can you play with me? And I'm like, okay, I'll get red. What am I doing? Here we go.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think about, so start with the dinosaurs, because I associate his dinosaur play really with where he was at and what we'd refer to with, like, as the stage 2 and stage 3, where there was more of that rigidity of play, of like, I need to play this way, in this order, with these terms, with these phrases and sentences. And we could think about that rigidity of play is very often a way of feeling safe and feeling regulated, because, like, it gives him that control and sense of, I know how it starts, I know how it ends, and then I can feel safe in between. Which you might relate to, because
I'm someone that I do. You know, one thing you and I bonded over was the fact that I equally will nerd out over the data and like the trends and knowing what the end result is supposed to look like
Yeah.
Right. And when it comes to play and storytelling, like even in my personal life, I hate that I'm admitting this to the group, but like when it comes to stories, I will sometimes like pull up the spark notes or look at the end of the book to know how it ends. So that like then I'll go in and read and enjoy how we got there. But like I need to know, I need structured play. I don't do well when you just say, here, have at it.
Mm-hmm.
I need rules. I need guidelines. I need all sorts of details, which Liam couldn't and wouldn't necessarily give.
Right. And it's like he could show those rules and that structure through the play. Like if you watched for patterns there, when I'm watching like a GLP play in kind of the early days with lining things up or doing a certain order, I was just with a client a couple hours ago where she will do the same sequence of small actions over 20 times in the hour. And to her, I can see there's that sense of safety. She's calm. We can still be connected and acquire new language there, but there are rules to the way that she's playing. And if it's interrupted, she seems uncomfortable or upset. And so when I see like a kid like stage two, stage three, who's creating this system of play where you can see like, okay, this is where it starts, this is where it ends. Within that, there's probably that sense of safety, feeling regulated, feeling that sense of control. And I think that kind of like how you relate to it, like once I know the totality of it, then I know how to be a part of it. That could be something where like for those of you listening, if you have a kid you're working with and you're like, I don't know how to play with them, have you stepped back and analyzed what is like the container of this play? Can you map out the container around it? I remember the first time it hit me when a client in my clinic was kind of mapping out the whole perimeter. They do something at the front door and then over here, and then they do like a different action all the way around the perimeter. And once I was able to map out kind of all like the pit stops, then I knew how to join in and anticipate what was coming next. So that could be a technique of where if a kid's play kind of baffles you or you're not sure like the rules around it, step back and see if you can watch the entire thing, beginning, middle, and end, and then you'll know how to join in. But the dinosaurs, I do remember that being kind of a more rigid time. When I think about Mario, and now I have a much more limited, you know, time of my life with him than you do. When you talk about Mario, I'm from Long Island. We say Mario and I get made fun of. So I'm working really hard not to say Mario. I think about really when he started to transition into stage four. And stage four is when we're referring to, from Marge Blanc's work, about that early grammar. Stage four, we started that in person and then there was a transition to virtual. So this was when we really started to lean into storytelling. Instead of just kind of like the functional daily routine or play-based language, I was like, hey, like that's going well. It's, in my opinion, it's time that we move into some of this narrative language now. He's really good at talking about what's right in front of him. But what if he can talk more about what's not in front of him? So tell me what that was like on your end to do that transition.
I mean, there were so many that happened at once, right? Like, again, that transition from in-person to virtual, you know, we're talking, he was not even four or maybe just turned four at that point. So I was already curious at what that would have looked like in general. But to no one's surprise, he was an early adopter of technology with the AAC. So why wouldn't he just naturally adopt virtual session? So I remember his early, when, you know, we started working towards storytelling, I remember hearing his frustration, right? When you would challenge him to like come up with more details or the then what. But I would also hear the fun because you would, again, tailor it to Liam. So he was in that Yoshi era. He wanted a blue Yoshi, a green Yoshi. He wanted the rainbow of Yoshis, and he would make up a story. So I saw that translate outside of session when he would want to make up his own story with his own characters, right? Like, he would take his external toys, have them have a dialogue with each other, and like have the conversation lobbying between the two characters, and really start to build the arc of what are Mario and Princess Peach doing? Are they going to go off on a journey and then get married or what have you? So it was really fun.
One of the places, because we moved into the virtual, which sometimes with virtual, I'll use real objects on screen. But what I've been finding when it comes to the narrative work, so working on narrative language, is using, I mean, my best friend is Canva. I love Canva. I love it. My whole world is on there. But and that's what I'm thinking about working on narratives. I'll often try that out with virtual clients. Because you can create a whole world on screen through, they've got the graphics, they've got photos, they've got videos you can put in little soundtracks, and you can build it in real time in front of the kid. And that just, it really worked for him. And so what I did on Canva was uploaded a bunch of pictures of his favorite characters. So I had all the Mario characters up there. And I also got different versions of them. Well, actually, no. Let me correct that. I started with the classic ones. But Liam's not happy with that. He needed them all in their race cars for Mario Kart, which created a really good opportunity for him to craft these sentences that contain grammar, which he's still working on. Because there are endless amounts of word combinations that can get, you know, points across. But it was a great opportunity for him to disagree with me, which I think we definitely want to talk about.
Yeah.
To disagree with me, tell me I'm wrong, tell me why I'm wrong, and then tell me how to fix it. Because we're not in person. He can't reach out and grab the thing and show me. He can't. It was limited. He had to communicate with language to be able to affect that change. Especially because sometimes with kids, as therapists, we pretend not to know what a kid is talking about to encourage them to expand or say more. With his special interests, I genuinely had no idea what he wanted from me. And so the emotion behind it was real and genuine, because I feel like there's a lot of GLPs I work with who are stage 4 and above, where like they know if I'm not being truthful, they can feel it. So I was really glad that I genuinely had no idea what he was talking about with these things. And it didn't, sometimes it feels kind of like icky to use a strategy where you're like, tell me more, I don't know what you mean. But it was actually coming from a genuine place. So it felt more ethical too. But he needed me to have these race car versions of them for the Mario Kart. And it gave him these really cool opportunities to be more descriptive. Because what I would do is I would Google Princess Peach Kart. And then what would come up is I would go to the images, and you think about Google Images, you have all of these options. Some were animated, some were the toy picture. And I would move myself off camera and I'd say, okay, which one? And he'd say, that one. Sorry, my guy. And that was also an opportunity to think about theory of mind. So are you familiar with that phrase?
I feel like you brought it up, but if you want to...
Not a quiz. This is not a quiz.
Well,
sorry. So theory of mind, very simply put, and then when there's a moment, I'm going to pull an article for those of you listening. It's this cognitive skill and ability to recognize and understand that other people have distinct beliefs, thoughts, desires, and emotions from your own, and distinct perspectives as well. So to him, looking at that screen, he was probably also pointing. It was so obvious the one he wanted. I'm looking at it. I'm pointing at it. I'm thinking about it. Not recognizing that me, 40 miles away, on my own computer, cannot, you know, I don't know what you're knowing. I don't know what you're thinking about or wanting. So that was a great moment to work on that out of pure necessity of, I truly cannot determine which one you want. And again, I wasn't pretending, which sometimes can feel like a little weird with a kid of like, tell me more. It was from a genuine place, which actually it felt better on my end. So then he had to practice that, a lot of what turned out to be like stage five grammar, to put together complex descriptions. I want the one with the black wheels, but not the gray spikes. Whoa. Compare that to parachute and ready, set, go. Is such a big change. But that's why I really like working virtually for, and it's not for everyone, right? Some kids need to be in motion. They need to have, depending on the stage that you're at. But for him, it really worked. And out of necessity, he had to construct these complex sentences to get his point across and create the story that he wanted to create. Were there any sessions where that you remember like listening in on or observing where you're like, ooh, I can use that for stories?
I think the prompts of them what happened or just challenges, you know, those like playful challenges, mm-hmm. how you would pose it to him in terms of storytelling. I also think about the sessions where, you know, maybe the objective was to work on articulation a little bit or like proper use of grammar. I still, you know, yesterday I asked Liam, oh, Liam, how is school today? He's in kindergarten now. And I had it a good day. I go, huh? You know, because I remember you make these really obnoxious, silly sounds. And he would remember, oh, I didn't say it right. And he goes, I had a good day.
It's so much of it came back to like it being silly and fun. I remember like putting up, like I wrote out hatted or gotted. And then I was thinking about like, he loves like the big, like wah, wah, wah kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I got like the big red circle with the line through it. Like the,
you would like spin it around or something.
I would cover up the version of it that had that overgeneralized ED. And I think that made it really, really fun and visual for him to bring that grammar to life. For him, just hearing it, he had to like see the language, seeing it in front of him and seeing the visual comparison was really helpful. Especially for when you think about, there are a lot of GLPs out there who are hyperlexic. And so their relationship with the written word is really strong. So I'm always recommending, can you write these words out? Even if it's like the ungrammatical version, write it out so they can see, compare the like overgeneralized version that we're trying to move away from the true irregular past tense. I'm trying to look back at my notes at something else because I'm noticing the time right now. This is going really quickly. You mentioned the kind of phrases to keep the story going. And I think that could be something good to note for any speech therapists or parents who are working on the storytelling with GLPs. Those phrases or those prompts to keep going, for me, it was making them sound so theatrical. Just because a GLP is in stage 5 or 6, in my opinion, the theatricality and the silliness like shouldn't go away. So if I was just like, and then what happened? Or then he said, it's not going to create kind of that like fire, that excitement. So you had mentioned, what was the one?
Then what? Or you know, I'll expand it. So if he said Mario went and see Bowser, what did Bowser say?
Yeah.
Just trying to giving him those nudge, but it wasn't so much what I said, but how I said it, that kind of was the motivator. Okay, mom wants me to keep going. I guess I'll keep going. All right.
And even there, if you're listening like to the recorded version, you're not going to see Mel do this, but you leaned forward and you gestured. Your body was communicating something happens next. A story is not stagnant. It's like you're moving on to what's happening next, and you've showed that with your body. So a lot of working with GLPs is about how can I embody the meaning of these words for that like full sensory experience. And doing that virtually, you gotta kind of like do it over the top. But even then, just watching you did all of this motion to accompany language that said what's next. Some other ones for those of you listening who, if you're doing storytelling or narrative work and you need some other ones I did were But then, and this, wait, just leave it there. But then let it hang, because you're giving an opportunity for something to just pop into their head. And it's super open-ended. There were two that he loved. I was looking back on my notes. He loved, he'd come to the end, he'd be like, and then Yoshi kicked the ball into the, and I go, but there was a huge problem.
Yes, he would throw a curveball. And then he'd have to go, wait, what happens next?
Right. And often I'll hear from a kid, what was it? And then I'll be silent, or I'll say it again, but there was a huge problem. And often by the second time, the kid is like, okay, I'll come up with it. What was the other one? Oh, this was one he loved too. It was, but then something crazy happened. I think all of those, it like, it keeps things going. Oh, one more. They're all coming back to me. But then Yoshi said something ridiculous. You're setting, it's almost like a little bit of a cliffhanger. But I think all of those, what was important for definitely working with Liam, but I'm thinking about like a lot of the other kids I've worked with who have gotten to this stage and been able to be, to have some success with narratives, was wherever they go with the story, I'm not going to treat it like it was wrong. Like, there were so many times where Liam would take the story in a direction where in my head, I'd be like, what? What do you?
What? No logic. It was true, just Liam's story.
Right? And I was like, in my head, I'm like, I don't know where to go with that. I don't know what to do with that. But the fact that he came up with the next plot point, or the fact that he generated dialogue, or he, because we did speech bubbles and we did thought bubbles, and distinguishing between that, he would come up with, you know, a piece of dialogue that to me was like, ah, what? But reinforcing the production of a piece of dialogue, a dialogue turn, because just the existence of it was amazing, that he was able to come up with a brand new conversational turn for a character he'd never heard. You know, that character had never said that before. It was completely generated. So that's something I recommend for like parents and therapists, if you're doing this narrative work with GLPs in the beginning, to like, reinforce and have positive reactions to them adding a narrative element that's not logical. Like, the logic can come later. What I really want to do and want to do with Liam is, can I get you to fall in love with how it feels to come up with something new? Like, it doesn't have to be right right now. The fact that you're creating this in the first place is really, really important. I'm listening and I like what you're putting together. There was something else that was in my head. I'm trying to pin it down. There was like one more idea. I was thinking about, okay, special interests. Oh, I know where I wanted to kind of bring it to an end. Got it. So we no longer work together.
No.
What? Let's talk about kind of like the end of the arc together. The decision making behind, hey, this, you know, feel like we all use the word journey so much. Like, this journey, like,
I know.
We've come to the end of what I can do for you right now. What was that like on your end?
Oh, it was emotional doesn't touch it, right? Again, by this point, we've worked together for almost 4 years, maybe a little under that. So you have become, I mean, you've seen him grow figuratively and literally before our eyes. Your like speech therapy was the last clinical service that we pulled back. You know, by that point, he was already out of behavior therapy. We were working towards putting him in school placement. You know, he was in a traditional preschool environment, no accommodations. Just to see how he would do. And for me, I was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
I was terrified. What does this mean? But I think you offered not just the emotional assurance. You spoke my language in that, like, we reviewed the data, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're watched the metrics. We watched the progression of his language, his ability, you know, his articulation, all of it, his storytelling. He met and slightly exceeded in certain domains. Like, and that's, I think, you know, like we had the conversation several times in terms of discharge planning. Like we had the initial conversation and then you're like, well, you know, we could kind of bolster him a little bit, but, you know, add a little buffer, it wouldn't hurt. And that's when we got really into the meat of storytelling and getting him, strengthening those skills. And then he sent me an email and you're like, we need to talk. Like, this is it. Like, I can't. There's nothing more he needs. I mean, he'll always need something. As you said earlier on during our time together, we're all constantly acquiring new language. They're teaching me so much from what he learned from their peers in school.
Yeah.
But, you know, you also reminded me, just as I know, like, even in the professional setting as a nurse, right? Like, it's not necessarily a goodbye. It just, it's a good thing when you have to end this relationship.
Yeah.
It's hard, it's scary, but you empowered me with the resources. And you reminded me that you yourself would always be an available resource, that we have the skills. Liam has shown himself consistently. You know, you had months of data demonstrating his readiness to discharge. And he's thriving. You know, we just finished first quarter of kindergarten. We had parent-teacher conference, and his teacher proudly shared, like, he is one of his top students in terms of language acquisition. And, you know, he's able to readily read those sight words where many of his peers can't yet.
Yeah.
So I'm really proud that we set him up for success. And I think that, you know, allowed him to have maybe an easier transition into the classroom setting,
along with,
you know, supports that we've done over the years.
Yeah. I mean, you took early intervention. You ran with it. You really did. I do want to mention, so we talked about, like, the data at the end. So one of the metrics that I used when I was doing, like, his, like, final language assessment was I was using what's called SUGAR, which is Sampling Utterances and Grammatical Analysis Revised. And if any therapists haven't seen that before, I'm going to put the link in the chat. It's called sugarlanguage.org. But it's really, I use it for looking at grammatical constructs and how they're developing for a kid. But just looking at his utterances, I did, like, the NLA analysis, then I did SUGAR, and he just came out above expectation for the age and the SUGAR. And it was that, you know, that point of, like, sure, there's always things we can work on. There's always things in, like, stage 6 grammar. Fine. But is that also, is that ethical to work on, right? If he is above what we'd expect, if he's, like, he's met all these things, sure, in private practice, we can. But, you know, just like for people who, like, go through insurance, you're like, well, we've met it, we can't anymore. Also in private practice, being like, is he getting what he needs from peers, from school, from parents? And what we could see from Liam, at least my clinical opinion, was that he had the momentum he needed, and it's maintaining over time.
Certainly, as he, I mean, it's just, you know, when you were describing the initial challenges that he experienced in terms of frustration over a virtual session, like being able to express to you what he was saying, like, you know, sometimes where we have a TV and, like, they'll want to watch something on the streaming service, and he's trying to tell Jackson, oh, I want to watch this. And Jackson's like, what do you want to watch? You know, and it gives me kind of those flashbacks of, like, Liam remembering, oh, I have to actually describe. Yeah. I want to watch Bluey. I want to watch the episode over there where they're in the grannies, things like that. So, you know, again, to your point, like, he is really so in love with the world, and I love seeing the world through his eyes because it is different. And I'm so proud to know that he is able to articulate and engage. He's so funny with his critical thinking, the word, like, how he uses language, it's like with his whole body. Yes. And I feel like I see some other kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's, again, in part of how you help introduce language to him.
Yeah. Language is a whole, it really is, it can be a whole body thing. So lean into that. All right. Big takeaways. Echolalia matters. NAC is awesome. Storytelling can really bring grammar alive. What are two takeaways for you before we kick people out of here?
Partner with your team, you know, parents, you are an important part of the clinical team. Your voice matters. Advocate like heck for your kid. It pays off in the long run. Trust your gut. And at the end of the day, they're going to be okay. You're going to be okay too. Make sure you're resting and trusting your team.
All right. Thanks everybody for joining to talk about Liam's movement through the stages of NLA. It's really cool to say that. And I hope to see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you so much, Mel.
Thank you.
All right. Good night, everyone.